Let's begin. Obviously, Yom Tovim in general, and certainly Sukkot, and when people come together in the hotel, so sometimes it's an opportunity for families to get together. And very often you have a merging of generations, and you have something very beautiful, sometimes three, sometimes four generations of families together. And I was thinking that it raises an issue, which is, of course, a perennial issue. It's not limited to the holidays, but perhaps at times like this where families come together, the issue is raised more, and that is specifically the question of the kavod, or the kibud, that we're supposed to have for grandparents. How does that relate to the notion of kibud avim? That it's not the easiest mitzvah always to keep, but we know at least that that's a mitzvah. That's in the Seres HaDibros. That's obvious. That's a classic. But what about, what is the source? What is the idea, besides maybe common sense or Derech Eretz, that one should have for grandparents? And once I was thinking about that, I was thinking in the more broader sense, when you expand families, we know that for a variety of reasons, certainly the question of the respect and honor that should be given to step-parents seems to be a much more relevant shaila in the current generation than it was in previous ones. And we have the notion of blended families and the challenges that can present. So obviously emotionally, psychologically is one thing, but the question is halachically, what is the role or what is the issues that are present in that? So both of these topics could easily be independent shiurim in and of themselves, but I wanted to try to blend them together into one kind of a mini shiur. So let's speak first and foremost with the issue of grandparents. The first issue, which is very relevant, is a psak directly in the Rama. This is in the Rama, Simen Reish Mem in Yoredeya, and Simen Reish Mem is where the laws of Kibud Avim, of honoring parents. But towards the end of the Simen in Sif Chavdalid, the Rama paskins something, which he actually mentions in a famous tshuva, a tshuva that's actually very relevant was to me personally. I'll get to that in a moment. But the Rama also says in a tshuva, what he says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch, that there is a chiyuv that grandchildren have to honor their grandparents. There's a chiyuv of kibud for the years of Canaan, for your grandparents. However, the Rama adds, it's less than the obligation that you have for your parents. There is a chiyuv of kavod, but it's less than you have for your parents. What might be the source for this? Not only the chiyuv, but the discrepancy in the hierarchy for kibud avim over grandparents. So there is a well-known medrash, which Rashi quotes in his commentary al HaTorah, in which we know at the end of Sefer Bereishis, when Yaakov is offering karbanos, and he offers as a prayer of thanksgiving to the Elokei, to the God of my father Yitzchak. But he doesn't mention my grandfather Avraham. And Rashi quotes there from the Medrash, the reason that he didn't mention it is because there's more of an obligation for kibud for a parent than a grandparent. Now if you ask me, strictly speaking, if I was giving a chumash here in the pshat in the chumash, so he could have mentioned it and still done it in a way that implied that it's less, I don't know, maybe there's a good answer to that, maybe there isn't. But the message, the meser, halachically and otherwise, that we take from this, says Rashi, that the reason he focused on Yitzchak, his father, and didn't even mention Avram, his grandfather, is because there's a higher level of kavod, an obligation of honor that you have for a grandparent. Not that there's no obligation for a grandparent, but there's a higher obligation for a parent. In fact, just one more point on this, the Shach, in his commentary to Yoredeya, the Shach, one of the classical commentators, he says, just to go so far, how far it goes, he says, we know that the halacha is ordinarily that a parent, even though there's a halacha called kibud avim, that's not supposed to cost children anything, at least in theory. It's a machlokas in the Gemara, but we paskin kibud mishel av. The parent, the child has to do the work and make the arrangements and sometimes suffer all sorts of inconveniences and otherwise, but it's not necessarily a financial obligation. However, what if the parents don't have the money and the child does, which can happen in many families? So then there is an obligation, then it is financial. What the limits are, how does that relate to your obligations to your own children, right? This is like the halachic variation of the sandwich generation challenges. That's more complicated and off our topic. But there is such an obligation. If a parent does not have the means and the child does, then the child is supposed to use their means to support their parent. So the Shach says, this even applies to grandparents. In other words, if you have a grandparent who is if indigent is too strong a word, but they don't have what they need. And your parent, their child, also doesn't have the means. But Baruch Hashem, the grandchild made it big. And the grandchild has the money. Then the grandchild, Shach Paskins, that even though we say it's not on the same level as Kibbutz Av Aim, but it's enough of an obligation that we could even require grandchildren, to make a financial contribution towards their grandparents' well-being. Now, I mentioned that this tshuva of the Ramah, where he mentions this same point, is not only famous, but it had a very personal relevance, and that's in fact the case. Those of you who were here yesterday, I mentioned that it was my grandfather's yahrzeit. When my grandfather died, there was an initial discussion about who would say Kaddish for him, because there was no obvious candidate to say Kaddish, and I was not only a grandchild, but I was the oldest grandchild, and I was a grandson, and there was initially a thought that I should say Kaddish, and even though it was new and untraveled ground for anybody, I don't remember who, but someone in the family must have had a sense that this can't be so simple for a grandchild with living parents to say Kaddish. So I actually went and asked the Shaila about this to my Rebbe, and the first thing he quoted to me was this Tshuvas HaRamah, because the Ramah was asked this question: is a grandchild allowed to say Kaddish for a grandparent? And the Ramah, the stakes were much higher. People don't realize always. In Sephardi communities, they appreciate this. Ashkenazi communities, we don't realize as much, because it used to be, excuse me, I take that back. Sephardi communities always had the practice that we have, but people don't realize, unless they're maybe from Washington Heights or they have a real pure Ashkenazic historical memory, but the original Ashkenazic minhag was for only one person to say Kaddish at a time. Even there could be 10 avelim in the shul, but only one person would say Kaddish. So how do you decide who says Kaddish? There's a rotation. To be a gabbai in those days was really a life-threatening job. You know, you think people get upset, you didn't give a musaf. You know, you have to juggle the Kaddishim. So the question was, it's a simple question of calculus. If we'll add a grandchild to the pot, everybody over the course of the X number of months will have that many less Kaddishim. So nowadays, if the grandchild says Kaddish or not, that's between him and his parents, him and his grandparents. You know, who knows? They'll say quietly in the back of shul. But in the time of the Ramah, it was a much bigger deal. Other people didn't want to let the grandchild say Kaddish. Forget Ayin Hara and other things. They don't want to take away from me. If someone has a chiyuv is one thing, but the grandchild. So the Ramah wrote his tshuva to say, in fact, he disagreed. He felt that grandchildren have a chiyuv of kibbutz av aim for their grandparents, even though it's less than they have for their parents. But therefore, he says, they have a right to say Kaddish. But he added, and this is where, sometimes you can, some of you may be familiar with this, but now you'll appreciate where it comes from. The proviso being that the parents don't mind. The parents have to give explicit permission. If the parents would say, we feel a little bit superstitious about it, we feel a little bit weirded out, you know, here we are alive and we hear our son saying mourner's Kaddish, it's a little bit of an awkward feeling, perhaps, so some parents might not want. So maybe the grandchild says, well, but I have kibbutz av aim for my grandparent too. So says Ramah, no, but the chiyuv of the parent comes first. So if the parent says no, then you cannot ignore the wishes of the parent, even in honor of the grandparent. If the parent will say yes, so then that triggers the obligation without anything in its way to honor the grandparents. So again, some of you may have had situations like this. You may be familiar in your shuls or your communities. So this is the backstory. This is the real halachi. Now you can have an intelligent discussion about this. This is where it comes from. The Ramah says, yes, there's a chiv to honor your grandparents, but it's less than the chiv you have for your parents. And again, even if you're not the most ayin hara-oriented person, a lot of people feel awkward about the notion of a child who has living parents saying Kaddish, and therefore you need to get your parents' permission first. Again, because of this psak that the Ramah has, he's consistent. He holds that there is a chiyuv, but it's a lower level than you have to have for your actual parents. Now, where might this come from? Again, I mentioned a story in the Chumash with a Medrash, but halachically, what mechanism might be the basis of this psak? So, in fact, it seems that it may be based, and this is the Ramah's opinion, it's based on a Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara there introduces a notion called B'nei Banim Harei Heim Kebanim. Grandchildren are like children. Now, what does that mean? In what context? Now, it clearly doesn't refer to emotional or love, because everyone knows that grandchildren are much better than children when it comes to love and being spoiled and treats and all that stuff. So, they can't mean that. So what is it referring to? So the context is actually a very tragic one, very, very tragic, which has to do with a person's obligation to have children, of puruvu. Let's say, God forbid, a person had a child who predeceases them. Even though a person already had children, but if the children predecease that person, so in certain cases, again, it's probably the least of the person's worries at the time, considering the greatness of such a tragedy, but if a person can get past the emotional point for a moment, on a strictly halachic perspective, even though, let's just make up a case, a child dies in his 20s. So for 20 years, the parents thought they fulfilled the mitzvah of puruvu. They had a son and a daughter. We paskin that you need a son and a daughter to fulfill the mitzvah. And now, God forbid, the son dies. So retroactively, it's a tremendous chiddush. It's not the immediate topic of our shiur, but the Gemara says, retroactively, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Because the mitzvah is not just to have the children, but it's to leave that legacy of children. It's to, for them to live beyond you. If they predecease you, that's not the mitzvah. So the Gemara has, that's a huge chiddush, if you will, l'chumra. That's a stringency. But the Gemara says there's also a chiddush you might never have expected, l'kula, which is, let's say that child who, God forbid, tragically predeceased you, before they passed away, they had their own children. And therefore, even though they pass away, they leave living grandchildren. So in certain circumstances, those grandchildren can substitute. And therefore, you could, through the grandchildren, fulfill your mitzvah of kibbur av v'em. Now again, this is not to be so legalistic and obtuse. I understand we're dealing with a very tragic situation here. I'm not addressing what would be all of our primary concern if this was really happening. I don't think, the appropriate thing wouldn't be to run into the shiva house. You should know it's okay! Because you still fulfill puruvu, because your son left a daughter. So obviously, this goes without saying that that's the larger concern one would have. But one person would have a clear enough head to discuss that issue. There is a concept called b'nei banim harim gibbonim. And therefore, going, if you will, from top down, from the parents' perspective, or the grandparents' perspective, I should say, grandchildren count, in this circumstance, the Gemara says, as if they were children, to help the person fulfill the mitzvah of puruvu. So says the Ramah, this famous tshuva, and this, again, he passes this way in Shulchan Aruch as well, it works not only from top down, but from bottom up. Just like in certain circumstances, a grandparent can fulfill the mitzvah puruvu through the grandchildren, what you see from that is that there is some kind of a parental, in quotes, relationship between grandparents and grandchildren. So hu adin, therefore, from the bottom up, the grandchild has a chiyuv of kavod for his or her grandparents. Again, the Ramah's proviso, it's not on the same level, it's not the same magnitude as the obligation for your actual parents, but there is such a mitzvah of kibbutz, and that seems to be the basis, again, this halachic idea called b'nei banim harihem kibbonim. Who says it explicitly? So as I'm aware of at least two sources besides this tshuva of the Ramah. We mentioned last night the Sefer Maharam Shik. Rav Moshe Shik was one of the great Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer. He says it. There's also a Sefer called the Sefer HaCharedim, which has nothing to do with Charedim with a capital Chet. You could be a Mizrachiist and you could still learn the Sefer. The Sefer HaCharedim was written by a contemporary, Rav Yosef Karo, living hundreds of years ago in Tzfat, and he wrote a book of mitzvot, which is very wonderful and still very popular to study today. So the Sefer HaCharedim, the Maram Sheik, and again, it's in this Ramah, they say that there is an idea of B'nei Banim Harim Kibbonim, and therefore, grandchildren have a chiv of kavod for their grandparents. That's a generic thing you would do to any elderly person, but that's not unique to your grandparents.
You mentioned that I guess technically, I don't know how firm it is, to fulfill the mitzvah of puruvu, you have to have a son and a daughter. So if somebody only has either only sons or only daughters, so I guess technically they didn't fulfill it.
Correct.
So if that son or daughter...
That's part of the discussion in that Gemara, yes. This is not a, yes, that is part of that discussion too, yes. There's a complicated halachic calculus, but that's correct. There are times where you could, in the next generation, make up for what wasn't able to be accomplished in the initial generation. All of this, however, is only one opinion in one school of thought. There are those who disagree with this. It's important to know. And to mention a personality that we mentioned earlier this week in a different shiur, the one who's most famous to disagree with all of this is the Maharik. We mentioned the great Italian Rishon Yosef Kolon, the Maharik. So he has a famous tshuva, Simen Mem Daled, where he says, in fact, again, beyond general honor and respect we should have for older people. And I would add, a assuming in a typical situation where the grandparents are very loving and generous to their grandchildren, so then there's basic generic obligations of Hakaras HaTov and Derech Eretz. But again, that's not unique to the fact that they're a blood relative. It could be, you know, there could be an old man in the community who sees you at the library and takes a, you know, liking to you and adopts you, quote unquote. That's generic. But what about specifically, is there Yoredei Hichas Kibud Aveim, a mitzvah of kibud for grandchildren to their grandparents? Says the Maharik, no. Aye, but isn't there this idea of B'nei Banim Harheim Kebanim? Didn't we say it's the Gemara? He says, of course, it's a Gemara. But he says that was only meant in a very limited context. That was only meant in the way the Gemara used it, which is that in certain limited circumstances, the grandparent can fulfill the mitzvah of Puruvu, of having children, through grandchildren. That's a Chiddush. But there's no source in the Gemara that makes the assumption that the Rama made, which is that you can reverse that and boomerang it and go from the grandchildren to the grandparents. That was a leap that the Rama made. Now, it's a very logical leap, but it's not based on any actual source. And therefore, the Maharik denies it's true. And in fact, one could infer that perhaps the Rambam agrees as well, because the Rambam, when he discusses these halachos, the Rambam says in Hilchos Mamrim that there's an avera, we know this is a very serious avera, to curse, you know, parents. Right. Yes. Yes, exactly. But the Rambam says when it comes to cursing grandparents, it's no different than cursing anybody else. As he said, that the Rambam says is beferish in Hilchos Mamrim in Perikei Halacha Gimel. So, that also seems to be pretty, it's indirect, but it's evidence. And if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, even though the Rama came along and said, ooh, there's a mitzvah to honor your grandparents, Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch himself, he does not. He doesn't say no, but he doesn't say anything. So it's certainly the Rama, it seems that the Rama thought that the Shulchan Aruch didn't hold of it. That's why the Rama felt the need to tell you that there was such a thing. So it seems like there really may be an interesting machlokas. So perhaps a key to understanding the whole thing and showing that there might not be such a machlokas as we might have thought is to introduce another Gemara. We'll make the problem worse in the sense of asking what seems to be a very hard question, maybe even a contradiction, but maybe in resolving that question it'll shed light on the whole question. And that is the following. Again, this is kind of a classic Talmudic hypothetical because it's incredibly unlikely that such a scenario would happen, and anyway, it wouldn't be relevant nowadays. But the principle of the hypothetical, I think, is very insightful and very relevant. The Gemara in Maseches Makos discusses the well-known idea of Rotseach B'Shogeg. If a person accidentally murders somebody else. So we know that the Torah has a, you know, let's say for argument's sake, let's call that the equivalent of manslaughter or something like that in the, you know, the secular judicial system, where we also distinguish between meditated and premeditated and murder versus accidental homicide and the like. So however you want to call it in English, we call it Rotseach B'Shogeg. So the Torah has a very fascinating, surprising approach to the whole concept, and that is a twofold thing. Number one, that as a sort of punishment to the person, even though he's not fully culpable, because it wasn't deliberate, it wasn't malice aforethought, nevertheless, the person has to go to the Arei Miklat, these different cities that are set aside in various parts, both on both sides of the Yarden River, and they have to stay there. Again, each part, every detail of this mitzvah is very surprising and kind of obscure and not the topic of our shir per se, but he has to stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. So he could have an 80-year sentence, could have a 20-year sentence, and could have a 20-day sentence. Whenever the Kohen Gadol will die, the person gets to go scot-free. But until then, they have to stay near Miklat. So you'll say, okay, well, what if they don't, you know, who's keeping them in? The answer is, aside from maybe the Levium keep guard, who knows. But aside from the fact, if he's smart, he'll stay in. Why? Because the Torah has a flip side to this, which is also very surprising. Which the Torah says, as long as the person accidentally killed is on the loose, is free, is not in an Ir Miklat, any of the immediate relatives of the victim, the Goel Hadam, can avenge their relative's blood, and with absolute license from the Torah, without a judge or jury, they can kill the accidental murderer, the Rotseach B'Shogeg. That's the halacha. This is just background. So now, the Gemara deals again with a hypothetical, tragic, tragic situation. The Gemara says in Daf Yud Beis, what if a father accidentally killed his son? Tragic, tragic situation. But the boy, the one who died, has a brother. And he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of a Goel Hadam. He's furious, bloodthirsty, furious at his father for his carelessness when he killed his only brother. His loving mamish, his soulmate, his brother, and he wants to kill his father. The Gemara says, is he allowed? Does the mitzvah of Goel Adam, which he has to honor his brother's memory, even allow him to kill his father? And the Gemara says, he cannot. It's not allowed. The Gemara says, it's not allowed. Okay. Now the Gemara says, what about a different scenario? What if by accident the grandfather kills the father? So the grandson, the direct descendant, clearly a Goel Adam, he wants to kill his grandfather to avenge his father's death by accident, but by hand of his grandfather. Says the Gemara, it's allowed. It's allowed. The grandson can take revenge against his grandfather for the accidental death of his father. Why? So the Gemara doesn't explain why, but Rashi makes the obvious connect the dots. And Rashi says, because there's no chiyuv of kavod on a grandfather. It's a Gemara. I mean, the Gemara didn't say it, but the Gemara seems to be shouting it. And in case we're not, you know, Rashi turns the volume up. Rashi says it explicitly, that there's no chiyuv on a grandfather. Says the Vilna Gaon, this is the real source for the Marik. You know, maybe in Gemara Yevamos, he's kind of, you know, one hand tied behind his back. It's a little difficult. The Gemara does say, B'nei Banim Harihem Kabanim. But says the Vilna Gaon, in a case where the Gemara seems to say, you know, virtually explicitly, and again, Rashi takes away the virtually and really says it. So you see, there's no chiyuv that a grandchild has for a kibud. Because if there would be, then just like he can't kill his father as a Goel Adam, he shouldn't be able to kill his grandfather. The fact that the Gemara says you can seems to be very clear from the Gemara. Not only is that a problem for what I'll say is the favored position for people with a modern sentiment, the Ramah's position, I think if I took a poll, everyone here would prefer that there should be such a mitzvah. So the Ramah says that there is a mitzvah. So this Gemara seems to be a problem. The Gemara is even more acute, because who's the one who really says it? Rashi. But Rashi was the one who in Bereishis told us that there's a mitzvah of Kibud Av for grandparents. So it seems to be a contradiction between the two Rashis, and it seems to be just a pretty strong question against the whole approach that is championed by the Ramah and others. So what's the answer? How do we resolve this? So one possible answer, which is ingenious but limited and technical, was offered by the chief rabbi of Prague, Rabbi Lezer Fleckels. Rabbi Lezer Fleckels had the unenviable position of succeeding the noted Yehuda as the Rav of Prague. You know, this is like an impossible situation to be, you know, but he did a good job. He's actually one of the most prolific writers of tshuvas that we have in relatively modern times. And just to make matters worse, I'm not a historian, so I don't know, but I kind of imagine there must have been some drama, because who was on the Bezdin, as far as I understand, was not the number one, was the Noda Behuda's own son, who was a huge, huge Talmud Chacham. The Noda Behuda has many tshuvas in the Noda Behuda are really from his son. He was a well-known Talmud Chacham even in his father's lifetime. So I don't know exactly what happened, but apparently there was some kind of a Bezdin that kind of ran Prague after the Noda Behuda died, which includes the Noda Behuda's own son, but as far as I another, a third rabbi whose name I don't know, and then Rabbi Lezer Fleckels, who as far as I know kind of was the number one who became like the chief rabbi of Prague. So he has these very robust and large tombs of tshuvas called the Tshuva Me'ava. So he offers a very ingenious, but as they come, a technical answer. He says, you have to realize that in the case of the Goel Hadam, it's not a question of do you have honor for your grandparent in the abstract. There's a counter pressure. The counter pressure is Kibud Av V'Aim. And therefore, what was the question? The question was killing the grandfather because he killed by accident, your father. So says Rabbi Lezer Fleckels, it's allowed. Why is it allowed? Doesn't that prove that there's no obligation of honoring your grandparents? He says, no, that's you're jumping too far a conclusion. It just means that the obligation you have to have for your grandparent is less than you have to have for your parent. And apparently, you see from this, he understood, which makes, I think, a certain intuitive sense, that the whole idea of Goel Adam, which seems so foreign to us, but again, if you imagine, you know, certainly in a more ancient mindset that that was a matter of what? Of honor. That was an honor killing. Your relative died, you honor that relative by taking a license revenge, in a sense, by killing the one who killed him by accident, or tafel shogeg. So says the Teshuvah Me'ava, you're honoring your father's memory by killing the person who killed him. Aye, that compromises the honor you have to have because he's your grandfather. Yes. But the honor you have for your father supersedes that. Now, again, it's very technical, but it seems to kind of work out. The only chiddush, which I would say is a tzarech ian on this, is that here you have the notion of an honor for a parent even after he died. Which we do have such a concept. We refer to our parents after they die with certain honorifics. We say the kaddish. But pashtus, that's not the same level as the honor we have in their lifetime. So to say that the honor we have to have for our parent, even after their lifetime, supersedes the honor we have to have for a living grandparent, he said it. He said it. I'm just saying that could be a tzarech ian. There might be room to investigate that. But he said it. And that would be one answer. But I want to share with you one last answer, which I think is much more fundamental and really opens our eyes to the whole sugya. And then we'll move on with time, for whatever time we have left, to the second issue of the step or adoptive parents. But what's a second approach? A completely more fundamental approach. As we have to ask ourselves a very basic question. What is the source of the obligation of honor for the grandparents? So one possible understanding is that it's an independent obligation. Just like I owe my parents certain things, and that's expressed through the way I hopefully treat them, I also owe my grandparents certain things. So I have an independent obligation. Now, I get less from my grandparents, so I owe them less. That could be one understanding. But it's a straight grandchild to grandparent obligation. However, there are a number of poskim who say that's actually not what's going on. That fundamentally, if you peel it back, the reason we're obligated to honor grandparents is because it is an extension of the honor we have to our parents. And our parents want us to do lots of things. We show respect to them in many ways. But again, in a normal, healthy family dynamic, pretty high on the list of what your parents would want from you is that you should treat their parents with respect. And when you do that, it is a form of respecting your parents, and conversely, unquestionably, if you disrespect your grandparents, especially if you knew that that's not what your parents would want, that would clearly be a way of showing disrespect for your parents. And therefore, there are some poskim, or Shlomo Kluger, Stechemed, others say explicitly that the obligation to honor grandparents is not an independent mitzvah, but rather it's an extension of the honor you owe and that is due to your parents. That makes sense, therefore, why? We said, even though there is a mitzvah to honor your grandparents, but it's on a lower level than the honor to your parents. So it's not just like picking, choosing, or arbitrary, or some kind of a quantitative easing, or I don't know. It's logical. The real mitzvah is the parents. And then a derivative of that is the grandparents. But like any derivative, you lose some of the value in the extension. And therefore, it would make a lot of sense. How does this answer the question? So now it really works out beautifully. Because now we have to ask ourselves another question, which is very, very interesting, which is, what about, and again, you have this, you know, life is complicated, and every family has got the tragedies or the difficult times that families deal with. But we all know that one of the more difficult things that a family sometimes has to confront is when an elderly grandparent outlives their child. Right? It could be a very, very tragic thing to witness, let alone to go through. But even if you're not related, just in the community, we've all witnessed this. If we haven't, some of us may have been through this. We've certainly witnessed this with friends or extended relatives. So it's a very difficult thing. So again, as I say, with all genuine, sincere respect to the tragedy, but let's isolate that for a minute. Let's ask just from a strictly halachic perspective. If the parent is no longer alive, but there is still a living grandparent, does that in any way impact the chiyuv of kavod that the grandchildren have to have for their grandparent? And this seems to be an interesting machlokes, but among others, a personage no less than Rabbi Akiva Eiger says the obligation to honor grandparents is only in the lifetime of the parent.
But doesn't that contradict what you said about the kavod for a parent death seemed after the guy.
Good. Yes. But that's only. Yes. So 100%. But that apparently, again, not everyone agrees. But this opinion, again, Rabbi Akiva Eiger and those who agree with him say that that is only for the parent, him or herself. Again, it would apply to a mother too. If I am lazily using just the male derivative, no one should take offense. It's the mothers and fathers here are equal. But whether it's the mother or the father, so they're the primary. You can imagine it's like, you know, neon flashing lights chiyuv. So even though there's a little bit less electricity, you know, you go from the 220 to the 110, but there's enough wattage that even after the parent's lifetime, there's still something to be mechal. But when it comes to the grandparent, Rabbi Akiva Eiger apparently assumes that even in the parent's lifetime, it's a lower level wattage. But what was giving the source to the wattage was the parent being alive. Once the parent is no longer alive, it's true that there are certain very specific, again, I'm not speaking now emotionally or otherwise, but there are very specific halachic obligations that a child has to their parents after they die. But it's obviously not the same thing as when the parent was alive. So according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, one of the things that falls by the wayside, again, I'm not speaking now ethically, if you will, or morally, but halachically, legally, is the mitzvah for the grandparent. And what I've kind of implied, but now just to be clear, I'll make explicit, is that what is he assuming, it seems pretty clear, is that the obligation to honor the grandparent is not an independent obligation, but it stems from, or it's a derivative of the obligation for the parent, which therefore, again, you could debate this last point. I think your point, you could agree with everything I'm saying and not agree with the last point. I think that's a good comment. But just to explain this approach, is that once you don't have the parent in the picture, unfortunately, if the parent dies, so then it's like a deck of cards, so then there's no more obligation for what was built on top of that foundation, the obligation for grandparents. Again, not everyone agrees, and your point may be the reason why. But that's what Rabbi Akiva Eiger and others say. And therefore, just getting back to what was the problem? Let's review. The problem was that we thought that there is this opinion. It's in the Ramah. It's in Shulchan Aruch. It won by popular vote in this room that we want to assume that there is such a mitzvah. But we said, isn't there a problem? This whole issue of the Gol Hadam, the redemptive or the revenge murder. So didn't we say if you're allowed to kill the grandfather, doesn't that show Rashi said that there's no chiyuv for kibbut avim for grandparents? So there's one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch is called the Yad Avram. And he says, you're missing the whole boat. Based on this new approach, this new understanding, now it all makes sense. It's because once you realize that the whole obligation of the grandparent was a derivative of the obligation yet for the parent, and if you assume, as we just said, that that's only therefore in the parent's lifetime, so what's the case? That the grandparent accidentally killed the who? The parent! So once the parent's no longer alive, if it's true that if God forbid the parent just died because of a heart attack, if Rabbi Akiva Eiger says after that happens, there's no more obligation for the grandparent, all the more so when it's the grandparent who killed the parent. Again, it's by accident, but he killed the parent. So then says the Yad Avram, that's why in that case, there's no chiv of kibud for the grandparent, and therefore the grandchild could take a gol adam. Again, I don't imagine this would ever happen, but again, it's a hypothetical which brings out the principle for the concept. And then it says Yad Avram, in that kind of case, maybe there's no application, but that would not disprove the larger point of the Ramah that in a normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill, halavai, much more common scenario, then there is an obligation for grandparents. Another one, just one final point which could come out of this, which really would be striking, again, in everyone's idyllic, and hopefully this is not just idyllic, but hopefully it's the norm, where we have happy, you know, stable families where everyone gets along. So even though you may have differences of opinion every now and then, but basically they work themselves out organically. But unfortunately, there are situations in every family, and there's some families where it's pretty much the norm, where it's dysfunction. Let's say you have a scenario in which the grandparent wants something, and the parent says no. The parent says, "You don't have to. I don't want you to honor your grandparent." Could a parent do such a thing? So there are poskim that discuss this. Exactly, and again, this would seem to be based on the same issue. Again, I'm not poskinning. Anyone who has such a situation should take it up with their local Orthodox rabbi. But at least so we should understand the issues involved, clearly this kind of a question is related. The more you see it as an independent obligation for the grandparent, so then the parents can't say anything. But if you see that it's really a derivative of the honor that you're supposed to have for your parent, and you'd be disrespecting your parent by ignoring their wishes to honor your grandparent, So then maybe they really can't put their foot down. Again, the bracha we should all have is happy functioning families, where these are only hypotheticals. But sometimes these do become practical. I only have about 5 or 6 minutes left, but I want to just mention briefly the issue of more blended or step families. Again, it happens in many, many families. I mentioned one grandparent who had my yahrzeit for just the other day, and my grandmother died just this past year, and she was married for many years to a second husband. So we had this exact kind of a situation in our family, where you could have the spouse of a parent, which technically speaking is what we call a step-parent. So I want to, again, I only have a few minutes left, and we really could have used more time, but that's life. But I want to mention that clearly here, and I'm intimately familiar with this because it was a personal situation in our own family, but clearly, and this, when I say clearly, I don't just mean intuitively, I mean halachically as well, as I'll say in a minute, there's a difference between a parent who remarries when the children are already adults and out of the house, and a parent who remarries, and then that step-parent literally becomes a parent and helps raise the children. So let's take one at a time. We don't have time to do justice to either, but just to familiarize ourselves with the issues. The Gemara says, and Ksubas tells a story of Rebbe, the great Rebbe, when he was dying. So he gives his, comes to have his children around the bedside, and he gives them a tzava. They should honor, the lashon of the Gemara is imchem, you should honor your mother. So the Gemara says, what kind of question is that? It's the Ten Commandments. You don't need a deathbed, a command with all the drama that that implies to say honor your mother. So the Gemara clearly understands and makes the point that we're referring to a second wife. And the Gemara actually says that it's hinted at in the Pasuk, when the Pasuk says, Kabed es avicha ve'es imecha, it could have just said, Kabed avicha, Kabed imecha. Why is the S? So the Gemara says, what is the S? One of the S's is marbed, it includes in the obligation, eshes avicha, someone who marries your father. And the other one is, Baal imecha, the wife of your mother, excuse me, the husband of your mother, whether it's the male or the female. But if you have, like, quote-unquote, step-parent, the clear implication of that Gemara is we're not talking about someone who raised you, but a second, but in the lifetime of the parent who you're honoring the parent, there's also an obligation to honor their spouse, even though that spouse wasn't your parent, even though that spouse was not one who raised you. But there's a nice adult who's married to your mother, married to your father. So here the Gemara doesn't really discuss it so much, but the Shulchan Aruch mentions this. Again, the Gemara, I shouldn't say that. The Gemara hints at it. But the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch, again, I'm being very, very abridged here, but it says in Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that that obligation is only limited to the lifetime of the parent. Again, I'm not now discussing Derech Eretz and Menschlichkeit, but from a Kibbur Aveim perspective, the step-parent obligation only is limited to when the parent is alive. However, it should be noted the Shulchan Aruch adds, "Umikal makom davar hogun lechabdam am aflachamisa." It's the right thing to do, not to just kind of kick them to the side when the parent dies. And the Aruch HaShulchan also adds a little twist of his own, "Bakach nahogu kol yirei Hashem." It's not menschlich. Again, technically speaking, they made no obligation, but the right thing to do is not to kick them to the side. The second, again, I'm not discussing the financial obligations. I'm talking about just on an emotional level. You can't just, not to pretend that whatever the years of that have passed history, you had a relationship with the person because they were married to your mother, married to your father. So again, technically speaking, there's no more obligation. But once the, even after they die, it's quote unquote the right thing to do. All of that is when you don't have any personal debt that you owe them, because they didn't raise you, they just married at some later point your parent. What about a situation which can be very, just as common nowadays for sure, where you have a divorce at a young age, and then the parent gets remarried, and again, well, I'm not even discussing now adoption in some legal or technical sense, but let's say, in however you want to define it in a meaningful way, the step-parent really is a parent and helps raise the child. So what obligations are there for that? So this, again, is part of a larger discussion, but there is a Gemara that says very clearly in Sanhedrin and Megillah, kal magadol yosom b'toch beso ki'il yolado. And the Marsha says it doesn't just mean a yosom, it means anybody, meaning the Gemara means literally anyone who raises an orphan in their house. But it doesn't have to be just like an orphan like Beit al-Azrahi, like we learned about in Netanya, there's this beautiful thing, or Amit has in Hilo, another Beit al-Yaldim. It doesn't just mean that. It means whatever the circumstances are, if you raise a child you didn't give birth to, and certainly a step-parent, if that's the case, is just as relevant as anybody else. So the Gemara has this tremendous statement, it's ki'il yolados, as if you gave birth to the child. So for sure it means it's a big mitzvah. How far do you really go? So you should know that there's a discussion in the first siman of Evan Ezer, Reb Shlomo Kluger has a suffix in Chochma Shlomo, would you even say you could fulfill Pru Urevu this way? Now again, what does that mean? Do you have to, you know, raise that child from the time they're literally one day old? What if you started raising them when they were 5 years old? That's not clear, but at least theoretically and abstract, he raises the question. He doesn't resolve it. And I saw a quote in the name of Soloveitchik that he held it was a, quote, partial fulfillment. So, again, gives us certainly a sense of the kind of appreciation a person should have, even if it's not your biological parent, but that there's certainly, if they raised you, they played a meaningful role in that, you should really, there is honor that's owed to them. I'll just mention very briefly two shilas, which again, this could make up a whole shir, but in the last minute that we have, what about technically speaking, keep it of aim for a step-parent? So here, the last word, which I have to run to, of this sugi is a tshuva of the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer says that even though all the halachos of Derech Eretz and Akar Satov and Menschlichkeit apply, but strictly speaking, from the Aseret HaDibros, number 5, honor your father and your mother, requires a biological component. If the person raised you, even though the Gemara says kilu yolado, it's only kilu. The kafa dimyon here, so to speak, is relevant. It's an approximation. Again, it means you really owe them. You should respect them, of course. But technically speaking, it is not the same halacha as you owe the biological parent. Because at the end of the day, for all the things that you owe the parent who raised you, there's something called life, which is the physical gift, which is the greatest gift of all, which however good or bad a job the parent did after that moment, but that singular gift of life is what triggers, according to Chasam Sofer, the technical obligation to keep it rain. And last but not least, similar question, it comes up with Avelos, which we had in my extended family a number of years ago, and I had an aunt who died tragically at a very young age, and my uncle got remarried, and there was a woman who basically raised two children as if they were her own. When I was living not that far from them, or almost across the street from them in Riverdale over 10 years ago, unfortunately she passed away. And the question was, do these children who maybe have some faint memory of their biological mother, but basically this woman raised them, literally. Yeah, this woman raised them. There's no question about it. They viewed her as a mother. They loved her. She loved them. But she wasn't their biological mother. Did they have an obligation or a right to sit Shiva? It's a complicated question. I could tell you that in the particular situation I'm referring to, my cousins asked a shaila, and they were told not to sit Shiva. And on an emotional level, it was a very, very difficult psak. And I didn't say a word, because I was just a smicha student or in kol at the time, but I thought halachically it was a very troubling psak. I could tell you that Rav Soloveitchik would have disagreed vehemently, and Rav Herschel Schechter has paskin many times. There's no chiyuv, but there certainly would have been a heter, a little bit different than the children, just so there should be some heker, but fundamentally, to allow a person to show that hakar satov and respect for somebody who raised them, even though they were not a biological parent. Again, I don't have time to get into the proofs from the Rambam, the Pesach Tshuva, etc. Rav Soloveitchik passing is totally mutter, totally legitimate, and Rav Schechter, when he quotes Rav Soloveitchik, he says it's the right thing to do. So that's not who they asked their shaila to, but it is a complicated question, and we should know simchas from our families. Have a good Yom Tov, good Moed.